This is Cameron Marceau with Black Liver Project doing another viciously sour episode of Monster in a Glass, the cocktail podcast where we not only talk about the history of cocktails, but the history through cocktails. This episode, we're doing the whiskey sour because this is the sour episode.
Pucker up.
The one sour episode.
We did the delicious
sour. Yeah, we did the delicious sour. This is the whiskey sour. That's probably a bit more popular than the delicious sour. Isn't the whiskey sour kind of like a bastard?
It's kind of a non-delicious sour. By implication.
It's like, why would you make whiskey sour? I don't know. I have a problem with sourness in general.
That's fascinating, because last time he was all about the licorice taste.
Yeah, he was on the black licorice candy for sure.
Well,
yeah.
notice that that wasn't sour.
Right, your taste buds are whacked out.
No, oh, right, yeah. So okay.
Yeah, no tomato juice, no sour, no caraway seeds.
Yeah.
So the next drink that we do has to have all of those.
All of those mashed together.
Oh, and peaches and cream or peaches
and dairy. Yeah. That's another. But see, I think that's delicious. It just makes me vomit, spontaneously.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, this is so good.
That's so weird. Sometimes I wonder if you like stuff that's like good.
No.
The answer's no.
It's an interesting choice.
He's a weird
black
jelly bean. Absent, please.
I only eat licorice flavored things.
Anise. Anise.
I bet he puts ketchup on his hot dog too.
He likes anise.
No, mayonnaise.
Oh. Oh, God. Okay. That is some heinous shit there.
So we're here with our illustrious researcher, Mr. Jason Cruz.
Hey.
We're also here with my good friend, Mr. Mick the Bone Doctor Layman.
Pucker up.
We're also here with another good friend of mine, Mr. Jeremy the Hackmaster Phelps.
Hello.
He pre-partied today. He was at the largest bar,
open air,
in Chicago.
Yeah, which it's cold.
It's
the coldest.
All
bar
of them were there.
He was at Wrigley Field. Yeah. Huh? So what was that experience like? I mean, we've all been, right?
Yeah,
not since I was a kid.
Really?
You're not a Sox fan, are you?
I'm not a baseball fan.
I'm not a sports ball fan either. But
sports
like,
ball.
Yeah, I know. But there's always those occasions, those work events and stuff where it's like, oh, we're going to go to Wrigley Field. And, you know, so then you go and you.
Also, they won the 2016 World Series. So that happened.
Yeah,
that
they can suck my dick.
Wow. I love history, except for when it's about sports ball.
Well,
I'll let other people like that. That's fine. No, actually, I'll talk about. I talked about on Long Island with the Long Island iced tea episode we did. So like, yeah, I'll talk about it, but like, yeah.
What was game time today? Was it 120?
120.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know,
so you got a bit of sunshine then. Everyone's nice.
We're in the shade. Okay. I mean, you know, we're decently close.
That's my favorite of spring games. Everybody moves with the sun.
It's pretty full.
Yeah, it's cold.
We were fucking, it's bad because, you know, at most major league ballparks, they have like a fan giveaway, right? And the first like N number of fans get a thing. Today they gave away a fleece blanket.
That's how spring it was. Awesome. Time in Chicago.
So it was,
and you got in right after things.
Oh yeah. Oh no. I'm not. Yeah, I didn't get one.
And you got to watch people next to you.
It was like you got it.
He's walking up, going, "Boy, it's kind of cold." And then they're like, "Oh, I'm sorry, we just gave out the last
last one."
That's pretty much how it went down.
And
we were like early.
Always
too.
Also wearing a coat.
Yeah,
you're freezing.
So how are the stands like packed now? Like,
no more so than usual. I've been going to Cubs games, and I'm not a Cub fan. In fact, I'm the opposite of a Cub fan.
A Sox fan?
No,
we got there. Oh, even worse.
That would be a Cardinals fan.
Yeah, the bird's on the bat.
Are
my friend.
You really?
Yeah.
Oh, because you're from Southern Illinois, right?
Yeah.
So yeah,
we all make choices.
It's regional.
You're born into it. It's just how it is. So I wear blue, but it's not Cub gear.
Yeah,
right. That's my compromise after living here for 10 years. yeah. I explained it to people around me as Stockholm Syndrome. it just is.
Sometimes you just end up at a Cubs game and you're like, I don't know why I'm here.
Well, yeah, you drink enough eventually, you end up at a Cubs game.
That's true.
You do have to empty out your bank account, though, to drink there.
Oh, yeah, it's a really great place if you like beautiful people who don't care about baseball and $11 beers.
Yep. Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, beer and food. Look, I mean, I fit that model, right? You know, because like I've been to probably about 5 Cubs games with people, you know, just to like go, and I don't think I've seen one pitch.
Yeah.
I don't remember seeing baseball happen there.
Well, you remember there was...
Not paying attention.
A handful of years ago, there was an interview with President Obama. And, you know, he's a Chicago guy, mm-hmm, right?
Yeah.
And somebody asked him, they were like, well, you're from Chicago. Like, what's your baseball team? And he sat there for a second, and he said, you know, well...
Who has more voters?
He said, you know, Chicago's great, but you go up to the north side, and there's a lot of beautiful people, and it's a gorgeous stadium, it's a great time. Nobody cares about the game. So you go down to the south side, there's a lot of working people, and it's all about the game. He said, I'm a south side baseball fan, I'm a Sox fan. So if you've seen him like go out and throw out the first pitch place, and then he'll pull out his Sox cap and like throw the first pitch out. There's something to be said for that. You know, Wrigley's great, it's beautiful, but
nobody gives a
shit about the game.
Always appreciate Sox fans over Cubs fans. I'm a Cubs fan. I will admit that.
But if
the Sox aren't playing baseball, nobody's there. And that is not the case on the north side. Yeah. People are there regardless.
Yeah.
It's just little Las Vegas up there.
Yeah, it's just then there's the mayhem in the traffic.
It's
and the garbage in the streets and the garbage on the trains. Like,
during that time of year, if I'm ever on the train, I'm like, okay, well, I live off of Addison. But if I get off at Addison on the red line,
no way.
It's like a sea of people, and or I'll just get off at Belmont and not have to deal with that shit.
If you're on the train and everybody's like standing around in the train car, holding the rails up top, and so you know you're in a sea of armpits.
Oh, I do that because I'm taller, and I.
Oh, that's right.
So I can reach.
They're sniffing his armpit.
I do that though because. It's the least touch space on the train.
Yeah. No, that's smart.
Everybody touches down below. I can reach up real high and I grab the bar as high as I can.
But the Wrigley fans that are always, you know, loud and drunk and screaming and
vomiting.
And it's
vomitous,
and vomiting. And it's really only bad because I'm not drunk and screaming and vomiting too.
Standard.
Know? Yeah.
Yeah. That applies to all drunk people, regardless of any sporting event they may have been.
That's right.
And that brings it all on back to the whiskey sour.
Yeah, all the way.
Vomiting? I don't know. Like,
yeah, that seems relevant.
Yeah, yeah.
A sour whiskey taste? You know,
how does everybody here feel about sour?
I love sour.
I actually dig it. Like,
yeah.
A little bit. I'm not like the. This is the
opposite podcast to your last podcast.
Well, if
like everybody else was like anise.
If you've got
pretty much.
If you have a bag of Skittles.
Dick.
What is
oh my
the
God.
First...
Sour Skittles, though.
Yeah, they make sour ones.
Oh,
now.
Those are so good.
Well, I mean,
not just normal ones.
But take just your normal bag with your yellow and your red and your...
Fucked up now because they got rid of the green ones are all fucked.
Yeah, they're
greens,
wacky now.
Yeah, because it's like apple or something.
It's green apple now?
It's totally
lime, right?
See? Green, it lost its sweet cred.
Green doesn't taste very good anymore.
Green used to always be lime, remember? Mm-hmm. And now you don't know what you're going to get. You could get green apple. You might even get watermelon. In some
no,
that's you might. God. You might.
It should be lime. Just stick with lime.
Yeah. What no, the? That's what the green no. is?
So
yeah.
in your bag of Skittles, what
I
is the
Jolly Rancher?
What's it the fir- what's it the did. What's yeah. the first color that you eat and what's the last color that you
oh,
eat?
Oh, Skittles.
Yeah.
Well, the last one's green apple now, of course, right? But before that, it was the fucking grape ones because God,
they're gross.
Like, you know what? They're all the same.
They're
flavor,
like, why?
Honestly.
Why?
Well, after the first like three, yeah they're all.
Let's use the proper name for the flavors on these because we all know.
Are you working for
Skittles? It's red. It's purple. Those are the the flavors.
I'd like to let the record show that Cam did not bring Skittles to this.
Yeah, black jelly beans, of course, are plentiful.
Yeah.
Well, that's because I'm not a, because I always go for the red or the purple first.
Purple though.
I'll eat a purple.
I've had a Skittle. Like, it's just not the kind of candy I'm into.
Skittle brow.
Yeah.
No, they don't. Yeah, Skittle
Purple's always last.
Skittle Brown.
Red is good. It's about the lemon for me, though. The red and the yellow.
You'll do like those first, huh?
Yeah, those
How about you, Mick?
I'm going for the tart. I like the tart.
So you're good. Is there an orange Skittle?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you've got your orange, your yellow.
Yeah, the citrus.
Skittles are more like the orange. Citrus tart tastes.
Ah, it's great.
They're great. No,
I wonder how much of that is psychological, though, because I was just thinking about. See, I like Starburst, and
you could play the same game. Yeah.
To me, though, it's like I always go for the red, but I like the orange, and the yellow is good too. But it's like I feel like after a while, I'm just like
your taste buds are burned off.
Yeah.
Well, no, that I'm like tricking myself that they actually taste different. Right. I wonder if I'm just like looking at it and I'm
it's all this gummy, is cherry. It's all gummy, sugary shit at some point.
That's not like with Skittles. I think the last time I had them, I was like, you know, there, just take all a handful of them. And shove them
there was, or a Skittle family. You ate them all at once, you ogre.
That's the way I did it.
Yeah, that's how I would do that.
I remember one time long ago back in a school cafeteria. Like, we were sitting down, and there was this strange colored Jell-O that we had. Mm-hmm. It was kind of pinkish, and we tasted it, and we're like,
That's never a good start.
I think that's... We're like, what is that? What is that? And we all decided that it was watermelon, and we're like, okay, this is cool. This is nice. This is good. You know, this watermelon Jell-O, it's different. We've never had it before. Then somebody else came and sat down at the table and tasted it. And like, peach Jell-O, that's really great.
Oh,
we're like,
weird.
It's peach?
That's weird.
We all tasted it again. Is peach? Is that,
what it is?
So like, I guess maybe it is peach.
Right. Artificial flavoring is just artificial flavoring.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's been tests done. Like, here, eat this. And it's cherry, and it's like, okay, now eat this. It's orange, and you're like, the same thing. Yeah, but you're looking, you're like, yes, it's an orange color.
I read it say,
those tests have been done multiple times. Yeah. And, but you know, I feel like, except in the case of the green, that you're getting something very similar. So if you get a red, then it's in the red family: fruit punch, cherry, strawberry. You know, they're all kind of in the same.
Blood.
That irony mixture. That's blue.
Blue. I think blue can go either way.
Raspberry. Yeah. Bubblegum.
Oh, the bubblegum. Come on with the bubblegum, though. That is some bullshit. The that's blue gross. Bubblegum. Yeah.
Those are really different. Raspberry or bubblegum.
Yeah,
bubble
that's
gum.
Not
are,
okay. No, it needs to be.
Yeah, I don't know why raspberry is blue in some cases.
But there is no blue. Well,
that's
blue,
the corporate bullshit
blueberry.
Is what that is.
Like, yeah, but bubblegum, like, no, that's not.
We're just going to, we got some extra blue dye.
And you're like, yeah.
Well, that's fine.
That's not
that's
a
not
thing,
what, that's against thing. Nature. That's not why you're doing that. That's blow pop
so,
right
so,
there.
So we've got a 50% in favor of sour, and 50%, you're not opposed to sour, but.
No, I like sour stuff, but I'm not like a.
Sour
like
drinks?
Sour patch kid. Yeah, sure.
Would you guys do sour drinks?
Yeah, I do whiskey sours.
Yeah, I don't.
Oh, wow.
Don't go that far.
Yeah, sour cream.
What about
is fine.
Skittle sour drink?
No, I'm not into the purple drink.
Just drank it.
Yeah, no, candy's great. Sour drinks, like, I don't know, they always seem to be so loaded up with sugar.
It's all sugar.
So if I'm going to have sugar, I'm just going to eat some damn candy. And then I'll, like, drink my booze.
Give me the damn candy.
Right, they don't need to be together.
Would you put sour in your whiskey, though?
Yeah.
No. No, I
would.
Just drink
See,
whiskey.
I really dig it.
I drink
odd
whiskey
man
sours.
Like, I actually like whiskey sours a lot.
It's not so sugary. Yeah. And I think if you do it with, you know, if you don't do the sour mix, then I think you lose a lot of that sugary sweetness. And then it's...
And ultimately, this is, like, we've seen this before. And I remember when we talked to, when we were working with Michael at the Brixton. I mean, it's a Whiskey Collins, right?
When we were talking before, it's like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do anything with this. This is every drink... ever. Yeah. Like it's mm-hmm. just the drink that is
it's like
is
not a
very cocktail.
It's
yeah.
just like you changed one tiny little thing.
Right. Yeah. And not even really. Yeah. It's proportions kind of. But the whiskey sour is bourbon or rye, fresh lemon juice, simple syrup, and nowadays soda water, and that's varies depending on the bartender. But so 2 ounces of bourbon or rye, 1 ounce of lemon juice, although some people do it with half and half lemon and lime. And 3/4 ounce of simple syrup, and so just topping it off with
just
soda water.
Make it sweet. I dig it.
And then the
garnish was the cherry, right?
Yeah, you could do cherry. Some people call for lime, like a, not a lime, a lemon, the a rind, slice or like lemon slice rind. Yeah.
See, I dig that. That sounds good to me.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah. It's refreshing.
Yeah, it's better. I think it depends a lot on where you get it, too,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, if you go to somewhere like Board 8, then they're going to give you, like, actual fruit juice and simple syrup. But if you go to the fucking, like, Cubby Bear or something,
right.
Then it's going to be like, okay, well, here's your bottle of sugar. And I'm
yeah, they cut it with my, Mr. Yeah. T's or whatever.
Yeah,
like, that's gross.
It's atrocious, yeah. So that's what I think of when I hear, like,
a
whiskey sour. It's like something that came out of a mixed bottle and it's horrendous.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think I, up until... You know, the last several years. That's the way I always had them. Was like, oh, that's sugary.
Yeah, and that's
it's
right.
Not even
it's
really
super
sour.
Sugary.
It's
yeah,
just, it's
yeah.
Like, ugh. It's a
yeah.
sweet drink.
It's horrible. Yeah, yeah, instant hangover. Really,
it right really is.
But it was one of those drinks that I did recognize as being kind of old and also just consistent. It was like, yeah, everybody knows what a whiskey sour is. When I started looking into it, I wasn't sure how far back, and the name Whiskey Sour, the drink with the name Whiskey Sour, comes about in the late 1860s, as far as I could tell.
Wow.
In cocktail books, I really only found it with that name. I think the first place I found it was 1884. But it shows up in newspapers and books and other places as kind of like just by name without a recipe.
What's the oldest one?
It was in the late 1860s. I didn't note it because it was showing up in a lot of places. There wasn't any particular one that was special. It was just... So I just, you know, noted late 1860s.
Is sour unique to the drink, or did they do sour to other drinks?
Yeah, though they definitely did sours. And that's actually why it comes a little later. So
gotcha.
The whiskey sours, as I mentioned, it's like it's kind of remained unchanged since even then. Like looking at the early recipes, it's like there's really no difference. Like there's slight variations, as I said, like lemon versus lime, or sometimes both, or... Occasionally, I saw powdered sugar versus regular sugar versus simple syrup. But outside of that, it was pretty consistent for, like, what, 150 years? Yeah. It was similar to
I do
to
like the simple
fashioned
components.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it is what it is.
That's what makes it a classic, really.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if it has anything to do with, you know, being like a Tom Collins or anything else, that it's just like, why would you mess with it? You know, just keep it going the way it is. But, yeah, it stayed really consistent. You can kind of find it everywhere. You know, I was going through and I was like taking screenshots of different books, and I was like, all right, this is pointless. It's like, it is literally in every cocktail book. It's and so, as you were pointing out, it comes from sours. I mean, sours are a family of cocktails, and they're simplistic. They use sugar, water, lemon juice, and a piece of the lemon or the peel, and brandy, gin, whiskey, rum. The earliest recipes I can find in cocktail books are for brandy and gin sours, and that's from Jerry Thomas's book. And he says, a brandy sour is made with the same ingredients as the brandy fix. I love this when they do this. Like, a lot of recipe books are like, basically, it's like, see this.
Yeah.
And then you go to that one, and it's like, now see this. And now see that. And you're like, just tell me what's in it. Like, I don't really, this isn't an index. This is the part of the book. Just, I don't need to
add this to cocktail number one, and you have cocktail number two.
Right. So,
listen, typesetting used to be really expensive.
Yeah, it costs a lot.
That's true. Yeah, good point. I mean, basically, so he points to the brandy fix, which was a tablespoonful of sugar, a quarter of a lemon, half a wine glass of water, and brandy. He says it's a brandy sour. But you just omit the fruit and put a small piece of lemon. Gin sour is made the same way. And then he notes something called a Santa Cruz fix, which is, and Santa Cruz sour, which is just rum. Same ingredients, but adding rum.
Huh.
We kind of talked about this a little bit with the delicious sour. I think even in that one, I doubt Jerry Thomas invented the sours. I think it was a thing before that. But I thought... Oh, well, this has got to be, if it is like a family of drinks, it's got to be much older than 1862. But when I started like looking around, it actually turned out it wasn't actually that much older than that. I mean, maybe it's possible he did invent it, you know, this family of drinks. But because that was, the earliest thing I could find was in 1858 from a periodical that was, it was a periodical. And the title of it was John Quill, in quotes, assists at a sociable. And it was from something called The Spirit of the Times, a chronicle of the turf, agricultural field sports, literature, and the stage. And he t- talks about a brandy sour.
That's a mashup.
I know, right?
Field,
I
was like, sports,
turf,
literature,
agriculture,
and then the stage.
So everything.
What does your Saturday look like?
Leisure studies. So he mentions a brandy sour. I found another place in 1861 that was in the Union County Star and Lewisburg Chronicle. And I don't know what this was. I kept seeing it everywhere. It was like a poem. It says, of everything that bears the shape of whiskey, skin, gin, and sugar, brandy sour, peach and honey, irrepressible cocktail rum and gum, and luscious applejack. I the poem was like pages long. I was like, I'm not copying this shit.
Weird.
It's, yeah.
That is so weird. It's like a secret society jump yeah. in or something.
Man, at the
Do
same
you know the poem?
At the same time, like, I mean, I know all poetry is boring, but that's
intriguing.
That's truly dull.
Right, I know. It's just like, my poem is just listing cocktails.
Ingredients.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, yeah. I mean, I can kind of add a little bit of lilt to my, like, shopping list. If that helps.
That's funny. You too could have
It'd
a
be like,
society.
Yeah, poetry slam.
Well, you're supposed to read it in a particular cadence.
Yes.
Applejack. Gin. Rum.
Yeah. Yeah, daddy. Yeah.
Champagne.
Peach. And honey. That would be amazing if that's how they did it. In
really,
18,
yeah, like
50,
exactly.
Whatever.
Like, nothing new under the sun.
Yeah, like beatniks were like, we totally invented this in 1850s. They were like, what are you talking about? Like,
consider this our announcement to appear at Burning Man.
Right? All those Civil War photos of them around the campfire are completely different now.
Yeah. Right. They all have berets.
Applejack.
What? Jersey Lightning.
What?
Brandy.
Man, they were having fun.
The next thing I found, and I had to pull this one because it was, I didn't know what the hell it was talking about. It was titled, The Independent at the Bar. The degeneracy of modern days is, we think, best exemplified in the following advertisement, which we find, of course, in the Herald. And I don't know which Herald they're talking about because there's probably more than one. This is a Vanity Fair article from 1863. And it says, for adoption, a healthy, good-looking female child, a few days old and used to the bottle, is of intelligent and respectable parentage. And then it goes on to talk about how, I think this is like a temperance warning. It was basically like saying, like, this infant is going to start drinking. And no infant of intelligent and respectable parentage will permit its things to be put on until it has been mollified with a brandy sour, in quotation marks, or consent to show off, in quotation marks, in the parlor before visitors, unless stimulated by at least two glasses of invigorating Todd. Like, what are you talking about? It's like,
wow.
Who's giving their babies brandy? Who's making cocktails for babies? Like, first of all.
It's the colonial fog cutter.
It's a different time. Your...
But it seemed to be saying, and then they go into this whole thing, this, like, they're acting out. It says, imagine little Mary staggering up to her astonished papa with an address something in this style. Pap, hick, give little pet a hick penny, whoosh, hick, goody little pappy, mammy shays, hick, give pet a high penny, little pet wanster, and hick lasses. And I was like, I don't know what the hell is happening.
That was a really good reading.
Yeah.
That was my
drunk toddler.
That drunk reading. Toddler. You are killing drunk toddler. Hashtag drunk toddler.
The last part of it was, I was like, I don't know what this is. It's like a warning or whatever. But then at the bottom it said, motto for a windmill, blow me. And I was like,
oh my God, I want that on a t-shirt. Just a windmill that says blow me? Yeah. Oh, that's
Are you
blind.
Sure they're not trolling you from like 150 years ago? Right?
It was like reading Facebook Brilliant. Comments on a news this, article. God, you're like,
this
what
is,
are you talking
about? This is
name,
this is an ad campaign right? for green energy, isn't
right?
it?
Right?
Yeah. It was all of that. It was like, let me tell you the story about this drunk toddler. Wind power. What?
Wow.
Good point.
That's the talk we had?
Yes. So after you wore me down with this story about a drunk toddler, You want me to stop using gasoline? What do you want from me? Yeah, it was very strange. Anyway, that it shows up in the 1860s, the brandy sour. And the first place I can find any recipe for any kind of whiskey sour is a bourbon sour in 1866 from a book called The Independent Liquorist. Independent
Liquorist. Can someone say liquor?
Settle right down.
No, this one is liquorist. Nobody, which I'm sure is not a real thing. I don't know.
That is such a great name.
I do want bartenders to be called liquorists.
Yeah, now. What a word.
That's like going to a druggist.
Yeah, I guess so.
With liquor.
A liquorist.
A druggist with liquor.
So they had a bourbon sour, which they point to as being the same as a brandy sour. And use bourbon in place of brandy. And I was part is unnecessary to say because you're calling it a bourbon sour.
Good same job, thing. Rummy. Yeah. Just replace it.
But you're just going to drink it anyway. Who cares?
Yeah.
Welcome to the liquorist.
I was just having a Malort sour the other day.
Oh, man. Yum. And how much did you throw up?
All.
All of it. All of the Malort.
Sidebar, fucking took my British coworker to a bar downtown, and I was like, I gotta get him a Malort. Ordered it, bartender gives me the look.
Don't do this to him.
And we did the fucking shot, and the coworker, he's like, that was pretty good. And I'm like, God damn it, what?
Another round?
This is not the desired result. Okay. What the fuck happened here?
I'm going to stop you right here because you're going to want to drink more. And
yeah,
I don't.
No, we're done. I just wanted to just leave.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
Anyway.
Ugh, gross. So, yeah, that was the first place I found it. The next book I found it in was Haney Stewart's Barkeeper's Manual from 1869, Bourbon Sour. Then I was able to find references to it in newspapers as early as 1864. So that was weird to me because I thought, well, okay, the brandy sour shows up in the late 1850s, and usually when you see the variations, they're but that really wasn't the case. Throughout the 1860s, I saw mentions of bourbon sours, and I just figured that, it would be something where, after a while, we see this with other things, they're like, well, I'm just going to exchange liquor, and then I'm going to call it something different, and it was really just people, it was right away, it's well, we have the brandy sour, and now we're going to have the gin sour, and rum sour. And now bourbon sour. And then it just sort of becomes the whiskey sour. Mm. At a certain point, they don't specify. As we've been talking about the whole time, it's super unremarkable with the other ingredients. It's the easiest thing to do.
It's versatile.
Would you I don't like gin. Well, then you're just going to have a whiskey sour. That's just how it works. I only make sours, so what do you want?
I'm going to lie to you, and you're not going to know the difference.
I have a question, because does this have anything to do with punch? Because I think with this, you're sort of part of the way to a punch recipe, aren't you?
It's probably, I always feel like they must all be kind of related. I think with, this one is so much simpler than a punch.
Yeah, but it's still one part bitter, two parts sour. I'm not going to rattle off a punch recipe because I don't know what it is. But
a poem.
Yeah.
A punch
recite.
Aha.
Recite.
I feel like it's still a similar thing that you're putting together, right? You're still trying to play those flavors together, and you're varying riffs off the same, feels like the same thing almost.
Is punch a volume thing? You just have a lot of it?
Certainly. Yeah. But, you also, I think there's a lot more ingredients that you can add.
Spices and crap.
Yeah, it's just throw everything in it.
You put all of the sours together, then.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. This feels like you just cut out the rest of it, and you have, that little piece left over.
Right. Yeah, it just eventually becomes the whiskey sour, and then they just call it the whiskey sour, because then it's use whatever whiskey you want. You can use bourbon, you can use rye, you can use... I guess you could use scotch. It might taste a little weird, but
Is that
whiskey.
Done?
A scotch?
A scotch sour?
Not a single malt.
Yeah.
Certainly.
I feel like people will use whatever.
Well, not scotch. People get knifed if you put stuff in scotch, usually.
Well, no, you've had scotch cocktails.
No, we have, but when
they're blended, I would assume.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. When we do them in the bar, it's always a blended scotch. It's right.
Not a single
one. No. Mm-mm.
Give me a nice peaty scotch with lemon.
Yeah.
I like the taste
before
of
we beat you.
There's got to be a scotch SWAT team. that the Scottish government keeps on the payroll. They just get on a plane and patrol, and they're like, "I saw you mixing that shit. All right, we've got another one. Get you, yeah.
This isn't bad with Pepsi.
Yes, it is.
Stories I'm not allowed to tell, but I wasn't there, but it's been done.
Oh, it's definitely been done. So yeah, I mean that was really it for the whiskey sour. But as I was searching around, I was coming across some very weird references to politics. This article it's called The Universal Biography. It's from 1872 from the Cincinnati Inquirer. It says Greer's ledger was offered in evidence at the suggestion of his private counsel. All the pages except two were sealed, but Justice Hogan ordered the seals to be broken, whereupon it appeared that nearly all the aspiring Grant statesmen and bourbon sour Democrats of the country were down for sums running of $15 to $1,500. I was like, what the fuck is a bourbon sour Democrat? And then I was like, well, maybe that's a fluke.
Also, $15 to $1,500.
I know, that's just good. Like, at that time,
that's pretty bad math.
So, 3 cents to...
That's bad math.
That is bad math.
And I can only count to four, so...
And then right the next year, I saw... It was a short article that... This is another thing where I was like, I don't know what you're saying, but why are you having kids drink? But it was another name for apostrophe E-M. The Hartford Current suggests that the name of Bourbon Sour for Brinkerhoff's new baby born at Columbus last week. And I was like, again, I don't know what the hell you were talking about. We have
no reference on this.
But I couldn't figure out who Brinkerhole was, but like, Jesus. I'm guessing he might have been a Democrat. So I was like, okay, so clearly this is a thing. Like, you know, they're calling Bourbon Sour Democrats and Bourbon Democrats. And I found something in the Congressional Record from 1874. So, like, the actual proceedings of Congress from 1874. They say, here in the volume of their acts, they did not even pass a law imposing taxes for the support of the government, nor one improving the public revenues. They did not try to do it. They took everything as the Bourbon Democrats had left it. They found the legislation of the Bourbons like a perfect statue from which nothing could be taken and which nothing could be added. And they kept saying that over and over, and like, the goddamn Bourbons. And I was like, what does this mean? And I kept looking for it, and I was like, is this an insult? I mean, it's clearly, this must be some kind of insult.
This is like the 18-something version of libtard?
Possibly. Right. Well, I was like...
Bourbtard?
So I kept looking for Bourbon Sour Democrats and Bourbon Democrats, and I couldn't find anything at first. And I would find all these references to it, but I was like, what does this mean? And I'm looking at political slang dictionaries and all these different, you know, dictionaries trying to find out. I was like, I can't find any explanation of this. But then in the Oxford English Dictionary, I found that there was one definition for bourbon that said, in U.S. politics, a nickname for a Democrat behind the age and unteachable. And they gave a number of different references between 1859 and 1884. But I was like, I still don't understand why they're calling them Bourbon Democrats. I was like, is it because like they drank bourbon? Right. Yeah. I thought, like, are they from Kentucky?
Right. Well, it's also important to remember that the Democrats then would have been very different than modern day Democrats.
Yeah, right. So yeah, and I thought, oh, maybe this is like a Southern insult.
Yeah.
I did find something finally. This is from the Brewer's Dictionary of Phrase and Fable. They said the family name of the kings of France from 1589 to 1793, and from 1815 to 1830, derived this, I don't know how to pronounce this, seigniory? I'm just going to say that, of bourbon in the Bourbonnais in central France. The family is a branch of house of, Jesus Christ, I should have looked up how to pronounce these words, Capet, C-A-P-E-T, Capet, Capet.
No, Capet.
Capet, yeah.
Bourbons also ruled in Spain, Naples, and Sicily, and later in Lucca, Parma, and Piacenza.
Yep.
As a result of the accession of Philip of Anjou, grandson of Louis the 14th, to the Spanish throne in 1700. And I was like, okay, so what? And then it is said that a set of the restored Bourbons that they had learned nothing and forgotten nothing. Hence, in the USA, the name Bourbon was applied to the Democratic Party leaders of the Southern states, with the implication that they were guided by pre-Civil War outlook. So it was
derogatory.
And I was like, oh, okay. So most of the time I was able to find it, they were calling them Bourbon Democrats, but there were a few places where they were calling them Bourbon Sour Democrats, and I was like, I don't
So they were making a reference to French royalty.
Yeah.
Calling Democrats.
But
right.
That is so like.
It's close. It's like 100 years out, right?
It's like it's less than 100 years.
So,
it,
I mean, that's.
So
that's
if they were talking.
That's close to them.
But that's like. It seems I don't know. Like
they knew history. I mean,
yeah,
like,
they must have because
the
like
had a lot to do with this country. So
yeah, but it's I don't know.
But
it's
there
a
was no
different,
TV.
You know,
like,
yeah, but
I mean,
that was
no TV.
The thing with the thing
years
with,
at you know
the thing with the
it's
bourbons
actually like 20 years.
Yeah,
or,
it's,
or 30
it's
years.
Contemporary. It's contemporary.
Pretty literate, well-read folks making laws and stuff, right?
Yeah.
So it might have been quite a slam to them.
That's what it seemed like, and I was like, okay, I get it, but I was like, that is a. I mean, I'm with you, Cam.
It, us
it
reading
seemed,
it, it's weird
to me.
Yeah.
It seemed, even after I read that, I was like, okay, and then I was like,
I mean,
but I don't get like why they chose
that. Here's
like,
a question: do we have anything now where we you know talk about some other faction in our country and relate them to a foreign faction?
No, we have MTV.
The MTV. Well, I suppose like the commies.
Yeah.
The Reds.
Well, there's always
okay.
the Trump campaign in Russia, but you know.
Well, but how about
no? When you say hey, I'm a commie.
Do we call people Swedish socialist? I mean, does that ever?
I mean,
come
I
out?
Do, but I don't know. Like,
not on a podcast.
I call random people Swedes all the time.
I know,
like,
but
you're Swede, and they're like, "What the fuck are you?"
So
talking
the, so as I understand it, the Bourbons were like they were essentially kind of like going back. So they had their revolution, then they had Napoleon, and then these French aristocrats came in and basically became the new royalty. And I mean, they had land all over, like you were saying, and that was part of the, you know, the revolutions were still happening all over in Europe, and the Bourbons were the family that was getting kicked out of Italy and getting kicked out of by all of these revolutionaries. So we did the Negroni episode. What was his name? Giuseppe.
Oh, it's like a pastry name, and they or like.
Oh God, I can't remember his name.
From Italy,
Giuseppe Cookie works for me.
Giuseppe Cookie
probably insulted a lot of people. So sorry, but
oh, Garibaldi.
Yeah,
that's a gangster fucking name. Right
so
there, by the way,
Giuseppe,
you're not gonna laugh at Giuseppe Cookie.
Well, you might,
you
but you're only
family.
Gonna do it once because
yeah.
then you have no kneecaps.
He exterminates you.
No, it was Garibaldi. He was the one who was leading the revolution in Italy, and in southern Italy, the Bourbons owned a lot of that territory. Mm. So he was kicking them out of Italy, and it's all of
so
this.
So by cookie, you meant chocolate?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah.
There you go. That's close.
The Garibaldi.
So,
chocolate or a cookie.
In a way, they're saying, like you were saying, it's the old way. Like they slip back, and yet now they're less effective.
Yeah.
Like they're getting their butt kicked, or they're not able to compete or able to deal with the changes that are happening.
I mean, it made sense when I read that. I was like, okay, I get the context of the articles that I was reading. I was like, okay, I get what they're saying now, but I was like, why bourbon sour? And I could not find anything that would explain it other than I was like, maybe it was just like another variation where it was like, oh, well, bourbon Democrat isn't even good enough. It's like, they're also sour.
Yeah, I think it's just an adjective added on.
And I only found that in a few places.
Probably not the drink. Like, they're just...
Yeah, that's what I was trying to...
just kind of
after a while, I was like,
it,
I mean, they're definitely not talking about the drink.
Yeah, they're crunchy about it.
You know, because at first I thought, like, maybe they are talking about... I mean, they're clearly talking about the South.
Yeah.
But I thought it was more of a reference to bourbon production or...
Yeah.
But
I
then
mean,
it was like...
That makes more
sense to me.
Let's be real, though. This is the country that has an Irish car bomb.
That's true.
Right. Like, you just pick stuff.
Yeah.
And
right. you think about it later, and then
you ignore all of the context and the pain and everything associated with it, and you just take it and give it a name, and there you have it. Right.
Well, we laugh at death.
Yeah, I think it's just as simple as that.
Corpse revivers.
Yeah.
Irish car bomb's a little different than corpse reviver though, because they're
Irish corpse revivers.
Irish corpse.
Sour.
Yeah. Sour Irish corpse reviver. Sour, yeah. There we go. So I mean, that was the most unusual thing that I came across. But otherwise, there's not too much to the whiskey sour. It just
it is what it is.
It was It is. It's all the same. It has.
It is delicious. Changed. That's what
they're
it
good.
Is.
I enjoy them.
Pass.
So wait, for you, is what if it had whiskey already sour to you, and so it makes it more sour? I'm just wondering.
No, it's
he doesn't like. You can't get a sour beer or.
No,
how did that gimlet go for you? Yeah,
it's fine. I mean, I can do it. It's just that, like,
yeah,
it's not,
just not into it.
It's just not my. It's not my pick.
Like, it's
so you know,
you have a weird tongue.
Could you say that slowly? You have a weird tongue.
I don't know. Everybody's palate's different, but
well, yeah, of course, because he's like would
I
eat
mean,
Cam's
just more
every
different.
Meal. You're just,
what if it was
black jelly beans for life?
What if it was a whiskey sour, but it had black jelly beans?
I'd probably that would be good. Yeah.
God, that sounds foul.
Whiskey like, sour
worm,
with a little bit
but
of absinthe,
like a black jelly bean at the bottom.
Oh, there you go. Okay, you have
I think
to have
that'd
a
be good,
Sazerac,
actually,
but instead of a cherry, a black jelly bean.
Yeah, boom, that'd be delish.
Actually, we just had an Aviation, one of the old versions of the Aviation at Ward 8, because. The Aviation had these off versions that were very different. Remember those?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
One of them was, I believe, it had like Applejack and absinthe and lime.
Whoa.
Or lemon.
It sounds familiar.
So, like, yeah, we had that delicious as fuck. I mean, we...
It doesn't sound like
that. Yeah,
it, you know, it was good. It was good.
I mean, I believe you. I feel like sometimes I'm like, there's no way this drink could be good.
Is,
like,
is huh. Applejack tart? Is it a tart, sour, sweet,
it's
sour?
More,
it's more sweet.
Yeah.
Sweet? Okay.
Yeah.
It's very... I
but
mean,
it's subtle.
It's
like just,
brandy.
It's like sweet fire.
Oh, okay.
Like,
it's
I don't know.
It's definitely Bernie.
Yeah, it's definitely Bernie. When you look at it, you're like, I could probably drink a glass of that, and you're like, oh, I probably shouldn't drink a glass
no,
of that.
No, you shouldn't do
yeah.
that.
It's real Bernie, and it's like vaguely apple.
It's called Essence of Lockjaw for a reason.
Yeah.
Ah! Wow. Wow. So... Well, right. They don't. Yeah, it's like the breakfast cereal. They don't taste like apples.
That's true.
Again, like all non-fruit flavored things.
Just trying to invoke.
It's just
okay.
Yeah.
So we have to invent a drink that we'll call it the Applejack cocktail, but we have to put Applejack cereal in it, or
it
just garnish it.
It has to be lightly frosted in sugar
coated frosted bombs.
Yeah,
with booze. Now with booze
for the toddlers.
Yeah, for your newborn. Yeah. Drinkers.
That's a good way to truly make your family miserable.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to eat it, and you can't serve it to your kids because it's got booze in it. So yeah.
I just want to round this out with
something for everybody.
An encore performance of you as a boozy toddler.
I'd love to hear that.
Let's be honest. Daddy. I am not too far away from being a boozy toddler.
At heart.
Yeah.
That'd be a great tattoo.
Those are some big diapers.
The boozy toddler.
Stop ruining my next tattoo.
Damn, you can sell tickets to that.
Yeah. I just inked it.
I just want to say that at a tattoo parlor. It's like, so what I want is a boozy toddler. It's like,
can I be there? Yeah. I want to be there. They would probably be digging it. They'd be like, yes.
Yeah.
I've been waiting for you.
Yeah.
Thank
They're
you.
Like, all right, I've done like three of these this
yeah.
week.
Yeah. Again.
What color do you want the
stencil one on the wall, or do you want something I made?
Right,
yeah.
Can you make it a zombie boozy toddler?
Any sour. Please make it sour.
Sour boozy toddler.
Anybody who works for Netflix that's listening, we're going to do a boozy toddler anti-hero, you know, very sincere, in-depth, like
very
exploring
sincere.
The boozy toddler human experience.
Right.
Yeah.
It's
going to be 25 episodes per season. Yeah.
I was just going to say.
Feel free to binge. Please subscribe to Netflix.
I thought you were going to say
if you need my agent's phone
number on Netflix now.
Yeah,
like,
now it's a genre.
Because you like boozy toddlers, you're like,
because you
know.
Because you searched boozy toddlers.
Here, watch. Yeah.
Okay, so we're done with we're done with the fucking whiskey sour then.
Yeah, we are
we're done.
Done.
Okay.
Only if you're going to drink with boozy toddlers.
Yeah. We'll do that.
Good.
We're going to Ward 8. I've got a whole team of boozy toddlers that we're
you,
you know
go.
We're gonna sit down. We're all good.
Yeah, and they won't listen to this, so it'll be fine.
Okay, onward.
The Whiskey Sour. 2 ounces Buffalo Trace whiskey. 1 ounce lemon juice. 3/4 ounce simple syrup. Soda water.
Okay, we are here at Ward 8 doing the Whiskey Sour. I'm here with the exquisitely masterful Mr. Eric Martin.
Hey.
Eric, are you a whiskey drinker?
This podcast has turned me into one.
Yeah?
I did like sipping them before, but I have definitely grown to like whiskey more and whiskey cocktails more.
Oh, very cool. Have you had a whiskey sour before?
This will be my first one.
Oh, fantastic. Okay. We're also here with...
Someone didn't go to a state school.
We're also here with the terminally adorable Mr. J's Ranville.
Emphasis on terminally.
Yes. How about you? Are you a whiskey drinker? You're a whiskey drinker.
I do like whiskey. It's not my favorite liquor, but I do like whiskey. I'm a fan of whiskey.
If you were drinking something straight, would it be whiskey?
It depends on the environment, I think.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, there are definitely some environments where I think just whiskey is called for. Certainly a derby of any kind. A funeral. Slaughter of the innocents. This is just how these things go.
Okay. Have you had you've had a whiskey sour?
Again, as somebody who went to a state school, oh yes, I've had a whiskey sour.
Now, in the first part of the show, I got beat up because everybody makes fun of how I like black licorice and am not a fan of the sour. Mm. And so I posed this question. What, if you've got a bag of Skittles, what are the first ones you eat and what are the ones left in the bag?
I think the purples are always the one that I like.
You like the purple?
But I like sour. I really like sour.
So, but you go for the purple flavor first.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've ever had it, since I've had a Skittle. So I don't know if I'm really remembering all the colors right, but I remember thinking, like the tangier and the sour ones, those are the ones that I like better.
The yellow and the green?
Maybe they were.
Well, the green, I think, has turned to apple.
Okay.
Oh, gross.
I'm not sure if I'd be as much of a fan on that. Because then it's just going to be like cheap sour apple, right? It's going to be like drinking apple pucker, but in candy form.
Well, but I mean, you'd rather have the lime?
Again, but it's been a while since I've had a Skittle.
Well, I mean, and the thing is that when you talk about candy flavors, and I went over this in the first part, is, you know, you really have to describe them by colors.
Mm-hmm.
It's when they change things up, like the green, that mm-hmm. you get a problem, because now it's like, oh, what is it? And it wasn't what it claimed to be in the first place,
because right.
you know, you taste a lime, you taste a green Skittle, it's not anything like a
exactly
lime.
I mean, I had Lucky Charms as a kid, and I can tell you that those purple horseshoes did not taste like purple or horseshoe. That was or, not natural
not,
flavoring
not natural horseshoe flavoring,
not at all.
How about you, Eric? What's your Skittle bag look like?
I don't think I've ever eaten a Skittle with pleasure.
Oh Jesus.
Did you eat one with loathing?
Yes, I have, yes.
How about Starburst?
Starburst are better.
Really? They're the same damn thing.
The texture is much different.
You don't like the candy coating?
My teeth hurt when eating Skittles. It's just something about the combination of the sugar interior and the sugar exterior. And, not a fan. Though, on a similar note to the flavor change, Bon Appetit has a web series where they remake American snack foods and candies and things like that. And they recently had an episode about making Skittles in their test kitchen from
really?
Scratch. Yes. It is a laborious process. But my favorite part was when they made the realization that the green had changed to green apple. And they were like, oh no. we're going to make lime-flavored ones. And they show the process of making these Skittles with natural colorings and flavorings. What temperature the sugar has to go to and what all you have to mix into it to get the texture right.
And when they were done, did the end product look anything like a Skittle?
It looked like a larger, less manufactured Skittle.
I don't think it was very well done.
I think
the manufactured quality is what makes a Skittle a Skittle.
Well, they did have to give up on the natural coloring. And they had to airbrush artificial coloring just because there was no way to recreate it.
Okay.
But the flavorings they did do naturally.
And the candy coating they had? So it did look like a bonbon Skittle? Is it like that much
bigger?
It
was actually just slightly larger. Oh, really? Like they got two measuring spoons that were a 16th teaspoon or something like that.
Wow.
And they mashed the inside together and used it as a mold, and then they dipped that in the sugar to make the coating. So it's very interesting process. Huh. Insane process.
I don't think they make them that way in the factory.
They certainly do not. But as far as Starburst go, I am a fan of the orange flavor most, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
See, if I'm going for a chewy candy, I'm going to pick the red.
The red.
The listeners are probably going to get annoyed because I say this so often. You get it in the red family, you know, and it's always like a cherry or a strawberry or fruit punch. And all of those are acceptable to me.
Now, are
like,
you, are
the
you
difference
a fan
between
of
the green apple and the lime,
is too,
that's an issue.
Too far.
That's a problem, yeah.
It's too far.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
The brown Skittle, chocolate, or poo? You know, that's too far.
That was absolutely a taste debate they were having when they came up with that color, too. Now, are you a fan of Red Pop?
So, like, if it's the fruit punch with punchy on it.
No, I'm talking Red Pop.
Red Pop has kind of got a cream soda, like,
it does.
Flavor.
For listeners who are not from the Midwest, how would anyone like to describe Red Pop?
I've never had it.
Yeah,
it's definitely a local delicacy.
He'd be horrified by it. I think it's as shocking, well, not as shocking, but it's along the same lines as Campari. You know, like you look at the red,
the
and you're like,
Campari.
Oh my god,
yeah.
This is going to be delicious. This is going to be this fruity, this faux fruity kind of, you know, sensation.
Sugary
I wish it was
soda.
A snow cone. You know, and then you drink it, and you're like, oh, get it out of my mouth.
Oh, see, I grew up with Red Pop, and I actually, probably because of the association with childhood, really like it, to the point where the place I worked at in high school, which was an ice cream parlor, served Red Pop ice cream, and I still think it's one of the best ice creams out there.
But it's not red flavored.
No, it tastes like red. It's not berry. It's not strawberry. It's not fruit punch. The only way I've ever been able to describe it is it tastes like red, which is really a fancy way of saying it tastes like basically cream soda and a lot of sugar and probably some acidic like base to it.
See, I feel like
red.
Cream soda tastes kind of beige. You know, red needs to be brighter.
Mm-hmm.
Needs to be. And I think that the thing that usually bothers me about soft drinks, about sodas in particular, is the carbonation. Like, I prefer like a nice 2 liter of flat whatever.
Okay, so I'm gonna bring this back to your original question, because I agree with you. And in fact, my preferred way to drink whiskey and Coke, you know, just classic standard whiskey and Coke, is that I think the Coke should be flat. I think the Coke, if you could have cracked that bottle and then just let it sit for about a week and then pour it over the ice and add the whiskey, like, that is a good whiskey and Coke.
How do you
Why
feel
not just
that?
Make a simple syrup?
Yeah, ultimately, yeah. But, you know, we're too stupid to do that. Yeah, I'm not a craftsman that way.
I like
our followers, our audience is. Like, some of the people who were, like, when we did the Cuba Libre week, there were people making their cola from Ramazzotti and soda water. And I was like, that's fucking crazy, people. It was awesome, but it's like, that's, I don't know. I think it's commendable, but it's It's not something I would have thought to do.
I have to say that when I get a soda, I want it to be 90% carbon dioxide.
So you really like the burn.
I only drink soda because of the carbonation. Like, when I gave up drinking soda regularly, I just switched to carbonated water. It was pretty simple.
You have your own soda stream, too, right?
Yeah, for carbonated water. That is...
In our household, the women of the house all are obsessed with carbonated, slightly flavored water.
Oh, yeah.
The cans of hint of lemon water everywhere, or hint of raspberry, you know. And there is often where there is a can left overnight. Like, I'll come down in the morning and see, like, several cans in various flat surfaces around the living room, all open, all slowly dying.
That's a shame, because those are not cheap.
Well, we get the bargain basement.
The
ones made with beaver ass. But those are the ones that I drink.
Where is that on the in the list of, or the order of ingredients? Where does that one fall? hopefully behind water.
Not if more you get beaver the good ass.
Stuff. The pure stuff.
Yeah. Pure stuff.
Stuff that's just a little chewy.
Yeah, I get the tailings, the leftovers, because I can't let anything go to waste. My cross to bear.
The Great Depression survivor within you.
Do you like your whiskeys tampered with? Do you think sour is going to go good in whiskey? How about the whiskey sours we all know? The ones with the Mrs. T's sweet and sour vomit mix.
Yeah, so I have sort of two reactions to the idea of a whiskey sour. On the first, the biggest one is just pure nostalgia, and that it is such a like a just turned 19 in your freshman or sophomore year of college. Like, you think you're having a big person drink, and so you're having a whiskey sour because, like, you're probably still adapting to the taste of alcohol, and you need that. Just like you said, like the sour mix, the kind of cheap powdered sour mix to cover and mask the strength of the whiskey, which the whiskey is probably not that good because, you know, you're 19. But looking back on that now, there is still that nostalgic factor to it. And then at the same time, it also makes me have like nostalgia for like an era of the 70s, even though I was not drinking in the 70s. I was far from drinking in the 70s. I was drinking milk in the 70s.
Yeah.
But it just seems like such a 70s drink to have.
I can buy that.
All I can picture is like Sigourney Weaver from the Ice Storm, like just drinking a whiskey sour with her like ironed hair, you know?
But you know, it's much older. It goes way back.
I do.
It's a class of drink.
It just seems like it just, I don't know, it feels like it's of that era.
Adopted,
you know?
By the 70s.
Yeah.
And I feel like to some extent, and this is just my prejudice speaking, I feel like the drink is more trashy than it is classic.
Yeah.
Like, it was adopted by the 70s with the bad sour mix. And that's unfortunate, because it's not like the story was really great. It was just like, it's just old, you know? People were making sours a long time ago. And so there's a tradition here that has been squashed by the pre-processed foods that we've...
But now's the perfect time for a comeback. I mean, nostalgic foods are getting remade and turned into brilliant new things all the time today.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, look how many grilled cheeses.
But they're being kind of elevated, right? Like, they're not just bringing back a grilled cheese. We're bringing back a grilled cheese on, like, artisanal bread and made with, you know, pimento and some... aioli that was like, yeah, it's like everything's been brought up one level. Like, what is the elevated whiskey sour?
My favorite grilled cheese, elevated grilled cheese, is when they make the American cheese from scratch. They get the emulsifiers and the milk, and they replicate the perfect grilled cheese from their childhood memories that makes them feel like their mom is handing them the sandwich on an ugly patterned plate.
Yeah.
What a perfect whiskey sour would be? I mean, I don't have any nostalgia. connected to it. So for me, it's just got to be something that tastes good.
So if you're going to use a Minute Maid mix, mm-hmm. do you mix it in water first and then in the whiskey, or do you just put the mix right in the whiskey?
No. That would be.
Wouldn't that be? That's like mainlining.
Yeah, it'd be like concentrated. Like, I don't even know. That's got to be a different thing. That's got to be like a. There'd be like a whiskey paste, a whiskey sour paste or something. Like, that just seems like something. You know what? That seems like something you would make and then lay out on a sheet, put in an oven, and just bake the fuck out of it, and then just snort. I mean. I hope I just didn't inadvertently give someone an idea. I just feel like that would be too much.
You remember mixing those powdered drinks, mm-hmm. and how there would always be those lumps.
Yeah,
you would have to smash against the side,
like with your
with the spoon to like break them up and everything.
Yep.
Do you think that it would be the same way in whiskey, or do you think that
if the whiskey was the sole liquid?
Yeah. Or do you think that the whiskey has a different enough characteristic, the alcohol would break it up differently? I'm curious.
I think it would still be mostly liquid, right? Because you probably still are using more whiskey than you are using powder. Like, yes. I don't think it would be, like, I still think it would be pretty liquid. I don't know. It seems like you're still going to get those clumps, and then you're just going to have, like whiskey powder clump.
I mean, again, just use a simple syrup. They take no time to make.
Right.
But this is an experiment for its own sake. Mm-hmm. I'm not looking for anything good. I just want to see what happens.
So what you could do to keep it from lumping up is make that paste first. You take a little bit of the whiskey or water or whatever you're using, make a paste with the powder, and you mix the paste in so that the granules are already mostly hydrated. And that dissolves much more easily. But you're mixing powder.
So would this work with your garden variety Kool-Aid too?
It should. I would think it would. But the you're always going to have problems because you're mixing granules into a cold liquid. And they don't want to stay suspended in a cold liquid. So you're always going to have some problems with that. Which is why a simple syrup is so much better. And you can even do Kool-Aid that way. I mean, those Kool-Aid
is... So this is your elevated whiskey sour recipe. Is to break down the whiskey in a powdered, like, emulsion, mix it into a simple syrup, and then add, like, pour over ice and add water.
Well, I mean, the original whiskey sour there's no powder in it.
Right.
Yeah, they're using... fruit.
Right. Right. Again, this is the elevated version of that, not the not the classic.
And the fruit using actual ingredients from the produce aisle is probably a lot easier even than a simple syrup. You just cut a lemon open.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Super simple.
Yeah.
Or an orange. Orange would be great. Grapefruit could be nice.
I wonder, I think we've done versions of those. There's probably other things in them too, but
endless varieties.
Yeah, it seems like that moves it too into citrus for me. I think you're losing the sour. Again, I also think though that, like I said, to me this drink is meant to be kind of trashy. And I'm not sure that I want an elevated version of it. I'm not sure I want a classy, clean whiskey sour.
Well, I think you're gonna get one. You're gonna get two.
I hope one of them is made with powder, that's all I'm saying.
See, you could go even further. You could have one that's lemon juice and yuzu, or Buddha hand. Just take it all the way there, totally hipster. Serve it with a plastic mustache.
I don't know, I feel like the ultimate hipster version would be the deconstructed version.
They serve it in three separate glasses. You have a sweet glass, a whiskey glass, and a glass of some kind of sour.
A glass of some kind of sour. And then an ice cube just sitting on the plate.
What do? You take each one in turn and then suck on the ice cube?
I think so. I think that's the hipster version.
You pour it over your head and you talk about how cool you are.
Mm-hmm. And you pay $17. Because you're paying for the time and the service, really.
We sound like grouchy old men. You can be Jack Lemmon. You can be Walter Matthau. And I'll be Sophia Loren.
Oh, sorry, are you Anne Margaret?
I have noticed some younger restaurants and the way that they are situated. Have you been to a Furious Spoon?
I have.
Not so family friendly.
No, I wouldn't. Yeah, I guess I wouldn't. I've not been there with a family. I've only been there with friends or with people that made me angry at myself. So, yeah. Although, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, people that make me angry at myself could probably include family. So,
I feel like, because the way they have it laid out, or at least the one I went to, it was all bars. It was all, like, counters. There was one table. It was, like, an outline of a triangle. So, like, there was only the points where two people could sit and dine together. Because, really, the other legs of the triangle were, like, starting to get too far away.
Mm-hmm.
So then the kids are starting to, you know, it's more of a bar situation at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So unless you have everybody around the triangle, like you bring in that large of group of people, then it's not... And then also maybe it's the idea of communal eating, because then there are going to be people at that table who don't know you, or at the bar that you're sitting at eating, who are going to sit next to you and who don't know you. And I feel like, you know, that would be unacceptable to older patrons.
I say that completely. Sounds a little nightmarish, like sitting next to a bunch of people family style that you don't know and having a total stranger just like picking the chicken off your plate because they think they've got license to do that.
Well, I don't think that they do that. I think it would be worse if they were like picking the scabs off of their elbow, you know.
Oh, yes, you're right, that's worse.
So like
I stand corrected.
Well, that person could be removed for health hazard, but there's something intriguing to me about those types of communal eating places where you're forced to talk to people who are enough like you to be in the same place you are at the same time. So maybe there's more in common there.
Oh, I totally get it. In terms of the variation, like I'm seeing it and I'm seeing like how it acts and how it moves and how I can learn to appreciate it. But I'm also like acutely aware that I am noticing it. And that means it's getting under my skin. Because normally we don't notice stuff like that. And if you do, then that causes some kind of tension. So like when I start to feel that kind of thing, I'm like looking around and like then I start to like try to analyze the situation. Okay. I'm uncomfortable because it's a little bit different. It's not what's normal, it's not what's to be expected, but you know, if you reanalyze it, you can kind of figure out like a way to make it work and how it can be beneficial to people in lots of different ways. But if people don't take that kind of time and energy to do it, I can see how old people get angry. Like, this bathroom has a man and woman sign on it. How can that be? This is destroying my feelings of the way the world should be.
It's making me think.
I know, right?
Deviation from the norm will be punished.
It's that tension. It's that little bit of variation that's getting under your skin, and people who aren't necessarily aware of how it's moving them, I can see that it would just make them angry. And maybe they wouldn't even know why. It's like, it's these kids. These kids in this place, they're making me angry. I don't understand the youth today.
I have a slightly deeper take on that, and I think we're seeing this pronounced right now because of who the baby boomers were, but I think, to be clear, I don't think this is something that was invented by or particular to the baby boomers. I think this happens with pretty much every generation.
Oh, yeah.
I think
yeah.
Every generation conceives of itself as the ones who changed the game, the ones who made things different, the ones who rewrote the world, which means that no generation is really prepared when the one after them decides to change it in another way.
Yeah.
And everyone, I think, looks at the one next to them and goes, wait, no, I changed it. Why are you changing it? And then
it was good before.
Exactly.
It
not
was
understanding.
Perfect then.
Exactly. Exactly.
No, I get it. No, I
think that's just a little endemic too, which is why it is that you get I think, you know, maybe aging baby boomers who think of themselves as so progressive and they lived through the 60s and all that, and then they go to a bathroom sign and they say, why is there both a men and women sign here? You know, because they changed the world, and then now the world has continued to change, and maybe that has made them feel a little bit different about themselves.
I feel like, to some extent, there are those generations that are defined as much larger and more important, like the baby boomers, the 60s hippies. Maybe we're seeing some of that now with the millennials, because they are making a lot of noise, and there is a lot of movement and a lot of political activism and attention. I feel like Generation X, we just existed. I feel like my generation were destroyers. I feel like we were nihilists.
Yeah, I think we were nihilists. I don't know about destroyers. I think we were nihilists. I think we were. I think we moved into the world understanding or believing that it was all going to be useless and it was all going to go to shit anyway, and so we didn't really have the motivation to try and change anything because we were told it wasn't going to matter.
No, our prophet was Kevin Smith, and our Bible was The Simpsons, and it was all just tear it down, break it apart, tear it down. And I think that was significant. I mean, it's you know, destroying stuff is never seen as like a beautiful act, but like, I feel like that kind of destruction of all of the cultural values and significance that had been built up, I feel like that was that made space for things for presidents like Obama.
Yeah.
And for people to grow more from it.
Yeah, I think so. I do miss, as a Gen Xer, I do miss the days when we were being blamed for the destruction of the world. Then everyone forgot about us and moved on to the millennials.
Yeah, we were just...
Come on, millennials. We destroyed the world before you did. We did it before it was cool.
I think you're still doing it. I mean, it's not millennials who are doing these court cases that are changing marriage laws. They're too young. They're not in the position to do that. It's Gen Xers and older.
The Gen Xers now are the ones who are, you know, making fantasy viable and allowing crazy stories that never would have been popular with our parents to become blockbuster hits. We can all live in a fantasy because us Gen Xers grew older after watching Star Wars and made it our mission to make space operas actual art.
Yeah. I mean, that is certainly the contribution, I think probably the major cultural contribution of Gen X, is that Gen Xers are the first ones that made it okay to still like the thing that you liked as a kid. That it was, that the Gen Xers are the first ones, I think, that said, just because you now have graduated from high school or have gone to college or have bought a house or have done whatever, that doesn't mean that the thing that you enjoy doing, like whether it was playing a video game or reading a comic book or doing, hey, whatever, you know, that you can still do it. It's fine. You can maybe even build a career out of it. Like, that's okay. Mm-hmm. And that's not disrespectful. And it's not, you're not stuck in your childhood. It's, you can actually make a career out of something like that. Because nothing matters. I mean, that's the upside of nothing matters. Is that when our parents said, no, you have to go do something important. And we said, why? Nothing matters. I can go be a video game programmer if I really want to. That's the upside. I worry as a Gen Xer when I see the millennials that I'm inspired by, that because I'm a Gen Xer, I just go, oh my god, what's gonna happen when they hit the wall?
Yeah.
You know, like, what's gonna happen when all that optimism and all that, like, no, I can totally do this, runs smack dab into reality.
Or when Microsoft buys them.
Or when Microsoft buys them.
Because they're such vibrant speakers.
Right, exactly.
You know, it's like, you are a real leader. How would you like, you know,
right,
$100,000.
That's definitely my nihilism. That's definitely my Gen X nihilism speaking.
Yeah, totally.
And it would be a legitimate pushback to say, well, that's not going to happen with these kids. Like, and maybe it won't, but that's just my...
Well, it happened to the boomers.
That's true. And I do think that the reason why the baby boomers have moved on from Gen X and have clung to the millennials is because the millennials and the baby boomers are the same thing. And when you see that parent that doesn't get along with their child, and it's like the outside observer, we're like, duh, because you're the same person.
Well, like, I also have a theory that grandparents or parents don't necessarily love their children. I mean, they do, but they know who they are. They wiped their asses and they saw them wreck the car and they made them miserable for, you know, 15 years. Parents know who their kids are and they're like, yeah, okay, go get a job and get out of here. The grandkids, however, they're awesome. Mm-hmm. The grandkids are amazing. They're better than... Are millennials getting jobs in, like, in major corporations owned, run by octogenarians?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, they're hiring their grandkids because their grandkids are cool. Their kids are fuck-ups.
Right. No, that's true. And it works the other way around, too, because the greatest generation looked at Gen X when Gen X was being born and thought, oh my god, these kids are amazing, they're so inspiring, and their parents were like, I just made a face because, you know, visual gags are great for podcasts.
When you hear the word spinster, what do you think of the person it's being applied to?
I think of an old stereotype. I think of an old woman in a long black dress with her hair up in a bun.
They're always old?
Yeah.
Why aren't they ever young?
Because the word spinster is always, I think, used as shorthand to mean old, worn out, not of any use.
Can you be young, worn out, and not of any use?
If you're worn out, and not of any use, I think you're. What are you, a layabout? Like, I don't know.
It's someone who's beyond marrying age. Right. It's an archaic term. That's
right. And what's really disrupting is when you look at it and realize that, like, marrying age, that meant like 26 was like, oh, spinsterhood for you.
Yeah.
You know.
I always imagined someone who was mousy, drab, and boring.
Oh, interesting.
Not necessarily old.
That's just a nerd.
Well, so be it.
Yeah, no, spinster to me always sounds like your spinster aunt. You know, who's like your aunt who never got married and is probably a little bitter. And I guess that always depicted as a cartoon of what an old woman looks like, which is to say old, frail, wearing black, you know, hair pulled back in a bun.
Totally not a PC
cane.
See, I see all of that with a younger persona, except no cane, not old. You know, wearing black, hair pulled back, looking down, not interested in talking with anyone.
Are you saying what would they have been called when spinsters were actually a thing, or what would they be called today?
No, I guess I'm just saying that I felt like, I don't know, I felt like there was a look that went along with it. Because, like, is there ever a hot spinster? That's one hot spinster.
That's a really good question. Well, here's the thing. So there's certainly an area of the internet where hot spinster is a thing, and people are enjoying it. I'm not sure what that looks like, but that certainly exists.
Well, we can go check it out now.
That's true.
It's probably a fairly large swath of the internet.
Is that what comes up when you Google hot spinster?
Yeah.
That's just because there's lace.
Are you sure that's legal to look at? She looks 12.
Yeah, I don't think that's a spinster. I think that's somebody who's very much still of marrying age.
That makes me feel very uncomfortable. I mean, those photos are definitely designed to make you objectify women.
Especially spinsters.
Apparently. I mean, spinster in itself is not a very nice term.
No, and you don't actually hear it that often, do you?
Because it's like a stereotype. It's a terrible thing to call someone.
But it's old. It's an old term, kind of like gout.
Gout is still a medical condition. You can still get it.
Yeah, but... When you do, people are like, what are you? From like,
what are you, a king?
Are you 100 years old?
This is the image that came up when I Googled sexy spinster.
Oh. See?
Which kind of fits what you're describing, like kind of mousy.
Yeah.
Although then, I wouldn't describe her as mousy. That's a very sassy pose she has.
Well, exactly. So that's what they're doing. They're creating the look, but then the persona behind it is switched up. I think that's a very accurate sexy spinster.
Okay, whereas this is what I would say a spinster looks like, which is this very traditional, like, high-collared, it's probably from 1910.
Yeah.
High-collared, hair up, like, kind of pursed look face, you know.
Miss Gulch from Wizard of Oz.
Yeah. Exactly.
there's also that like stereotype of them having a horrible mean personality.
Yeah, like bitter, and
they're so bitter. They never found a man, and it turned them into a horrible person.
Well, that's what happens.
That's what happened to me.
You achieved your spinsterhood at age 19.
I did. It's a long, hard process, but I aced all the tests.
I love that sweater and those knee-high socks you're wearing.
You are actually wearing an outfit that could qualify as spinster.
Spinster
I'll
chic.
Get you, my pretty. I'm just waiting for that season of Project Runway to come on.
Oh, God, I can't wait to see who the guest judge is that week.
Michael Kors will come back and ream all of them.
I would say, if it's not Cloris Leachman, they've done everything wrong.
Well, she's as far from a spinster as you can get.
No, but she looks like she could play a good spinster.
She probably could. She'd have to play up tight, though. I don't know if that's in her wheelhouse.
Oh, sure it is. We've seen Mel Brooks movies. Like we've all seen Young Frankenstein. There's a spinster. Frau Blücher is a total spinster. Like, she's definitely depicted as a spinster.
Yes, but well, sort of. I mean, she sort of had a thing for the old Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm, but he's been dead for years. She never moved on. She's still whispering to his portrait every night. And she's, in the meantime, stalking around this castle, not shaking every time horses scream when they hear her name.
So have either of you seen Solo?
I read all the spoilers.
Are you bothered by spoilers?
Depends.
I generally want... If it's a movie I'm excited about, I want to experience it. But it depends on the movie. Half the time, I can get into a movie to sort of let my brain shut down, and I'll just watch the movie. And the ending, which could have been totally obvious from the beginning... Because I let my brain shut down. I don't see it coming, and I'm like, oh, that was great. That was entertaining. And other times, I get into something, and I'm like, clearly it's going to go this way, and this way, and this way. And when it does, I get frustrated with myself.
I've heard that you know, scientifically, the studies that have been done have indicated that spoilers actually make people want to see it more.
Yeah, on the whole, they seem to improve people's enjoyment. When people report back what their enjoyment was of the movie after knowing about the spoiler, more people tend to say that they got more enjoyment out of it than less.
I have no problem with spoilers. Like, I haven't watched one episode of Game of Thrones, but I've seen all of the deaths on YouTube. So I know everybody who's gonna die. And I don't even know their backstory. I'm just like, oh. But see, to some extent that makes me interested. It's like, there's that person who looks really weird, and he's dead. I wonder why.
So, do you have a problem with prequels?
No, not at all. Okay. I love it. I love going into a story deeper. It's like any story is incomplete because it's like, oh, you didn't go into the depth of every single character.
Right. Well, you can always tell more story.
Yeah.
You can always find something to talk about.
Exactly.
With your characters.
Exactly.
The problem is, in theory, most people live rather boring lives, and you're usually only coming across, like, the few moments of action in their lives that make for an interesting story. So everyone thinks Princess Leia is an interesting character. Nobody wants to sit through a movie about her learning, like, the rules of the Senate and becoming a senator. Like, nobody wants to watch that. That's boring. That sounds terrible. Unless there's some sort of intrigue attached to it, no one cares.
I don't know. I think somehow I might enjoy that.
I'm actually kind of curious, because she's a princess, so why would she need to be a senator, too?
I'm ashamed of myself for knowing this. Well, actually, you know what? I was going to say I thought I knew the answer. Maybe I don't. Real Star Wars dorks will correct me on this one. So her planet is Alderaan, right? She grows up on Alderaan.
Yeah, it was.
Maybe Alderaan was like Naboo in that you had a royal family that was elected, and then the tradition is after an election, or in some point of election, they go on to some other form of public service. The same way that her mother is queen of Naboo in one movie, and then in the next movie, she's the senator from Naboo. I'm totally reaching on this one, because the actual answer is because it doesn't make any fucking sense.
Yeah, but see, you just made it interesting. you know, when you say things on the surface about, like, how the politics or the education or something is not interesting, well, I mean, if you explain it quickly, I guess it's pretty interesting. You know, like the way things come about and stuff. I always hated history after, like, the 1400s. I always loved classic history and medieval history and stuff like that, because it always seemed much more vibrant. Like, there were less people having meetings and talking.
That's probably true.
But now that I've started this podcast and have, like, learned about all the people having meetings and talking, I'm like, holy shit, this is really cool. The interplay of people and strategies, how a political movement started one way, you know, progressive, and ended up fascist at the end, and it's all just really, really cool. I can't get enough of it.
There's a really cool story about how it is that a 19th century sex cult is probably the reason that one of the American presidents was assassinated. In upstate New York in the 19th century, there was a society called the Oneida Perfectionist Society. They were one of the many utopian societies that kind of created themselves at this time. And they practiced free love. That was one of their big selling points. And this one guy who tried to be incorporated into the society.
He didn't want to wear the mask, did he?
What's that?
He didn't want to wear the mask.
You know, history is quiet on the masks. We do know that his name was Anton Czolgosz, and he tried to join the cult. He was allowed. I think it's telling that he was always kind of weird. Like, he was always a little off. And apparently he was one of the only people who could not find a willing partner, which gives you something to think about, that in a free love society, he was the only guy who couldn't get laid. He kind of got bitter about this. He got turned onto politics and eventually figured out that the reason why so many things were wrong in the country, including with his own personal life, was because of President William McKinley.
Oh.
So he shot him.
Okay. He was the first incel.
He was the first. He was kind of the first incel, actually. Yeah. He was. There's like a long-standing rumor or myth that he did it to win the affection, or at least the attention, of Emma Goldsmith, who was an early kind of like anarchist and radical.
Oh yeah.
I don't know that that's ever been proven, but that's always been kind of in the telling of that. But yeah, he killed Bill McKinley.
How romantic.
At some point, history will repeat art, which will repeat history, and Jodie Foster will star in a movie about all this. Popeyes is offering a special on ripping chicken for $5. I'm not too sure what ripping means in this context.
It's like what happens after, like what comes out of you?
Well, that's what I'm worried about.
Right. Like,
that it tastes good, though.
Tastes good going one way. Probably feels maybe a little different the other way.
It reminds me of my favorite joke from this is an apocryphal story. I don't know if it actually happened. It was after Hurricane Katrina. Have you heard this before? There were reporters down in some of the flooded neighborhoods, and they asked a local resident, oh, all this devastation, all these houses are gone, and I noticed that all of the churches have been destroyed. And the local resident responded, well, I don't know about you, but I go to Popeyes.
Does churches even exist anymore?
Yeah, it still does.
Whiskey sour.
Aha!
Two very different looking whiskey sour.
Which one is the house whiskey sour?
So this one is the way, this is our house style here, this little one. Which, I guess the difference is we use an egg white in ours, and no soda water. So according to the book, it's a little bit taller with the soda. We did Buffalo Trace bourbon in both of them. The ratios are a little bit different, but close. But yeah, this is the soda versus egg white, I guess.
Very cool. Yeah. Awesome. Thanks for making two very different sizes.
Yeah, cool. Let us know what you think.
Awesome, thanks.
Their house version looks like a cappuccino, just lighter colored.
Does it taste like college?
It tastes like college, but it tastes like the honors dorm in college. I'm just kidding. I lived in the honors dorm. It didn't taste that good. That tastes much better than the college version. It does, though, definitely taste like a whiskey sour. Like a classic whiskey sour.
Their house version with the egg white adds quite a bit. I mean, it's generally a very flat taste.
Yeah.
But the egg white adds a really nice texture.
I really like it with the egg white. I really like the house version of it.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm going to go back on my earlier comment about how do you elevate the whiskey sour, and I think that's how you do it.
Now, this one has soda water in it.
Mm-hmm.
Does this one feel
you know
heavier?
What?
Less...
This feels... I was actually... this.
The house version, how does...
I think this tastes brighter.
Really?
I do. Although I think that is... Well, it's soda water. There's just that little bit of carbonation. There's that little bit of like tang to
it. Well, I mean, you look at it, it looks like lemonade.
It does.
So it looks very light, and when you taste it, it is very bright.
And this
looks concentrated.
Thicker.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It tastes this to me. I think tastes brighter. Let me try the classic again.
I think the flavor is diluted by the soda water.
I think so.
Neither of them have complex flavors.
Oh my god, the house version is awesome.
Yeah.
Now that is a fucking whiskey sour. That is an awesome drink. I have never tasted a whiskey sour that good.
Yeah, the house version is really, really tasty.
I don't
it actually
normally
has body to it, which might be the difference between using soda water. Which has definitely kind of diluted it a little bit.
The
classic.
In the classic, the soda water kind of brings it a little bit of bite.
Mm-hmm. But you give up the
richness of the citrus.
Yeah, I was actually hesitating in using the word richness because I was like, I don't know, is rich a term we apply to a whiskey sour? But I know exactly what you mean.
It's so different from whiskey sour. You know, it's like I'm used to. A whiskey sour that burns.
Yeah.
You drink it, it's like you just swallowed your vomit again. You know,
yeah,
like,
it
you know,
that
it's
sort
got
of, that sort of back of the throat, like...
Yeah, it's like, you know, it doesn't feel good. This one, it's rich and thick and it's just alive with flavor and has none of that bite.
Yep. This is the house version is very, very smooth. Which is not to say that the standard isn't. It's just that the standard, I think, again, it's been watered down by the soda water, which makes it actually, you know what? The standard version tastes cheaper. It tastes a lot cheaper.
But it doesn't taste like a Mrs. T's.
No. It doesn't taste trashy. It just tastes cheaper.
Yes. I would drink the classic version all day.
Really?
I would drink those all day, and I would drink them too fast, and I would get wasted really fast. But then I would keep going because it's delicious.
Because it goes right down. Yeah.
The house version, I don't feel worthy enough to drink all day. It's so good. Like I feel like you have one, and you're like, that's all I should have.
It definitely feels a little bit more decadent, which again is not a term I would apply normally to a whiskey sour. But it feels, the way they've done it, it definitely feels like something that you could order at a nicer restaurant and that you would have, like, you know, as your one drink through dinner. Like the one you just sort of had there and sipped slowly over the course of an hour or so.
I think that the book version would pair really well with foods that are probably higher in fat, like burgers, fries. It has, because of the soda water and the brightness, it has a soda quality.
Yeah.
Which would be really great with that. I think that the house version is more of a dessert type of drink. It finishes with almost a marshmallow flavor, a hint of sweetness. The egg white, I think, adds that. So it's
Yeah.
It's a lot of,
I think
more
you just,
of a treat.
You
yeah,
just,
it's creamy.
You just described what I did in better way. You know, like the this one, the classic.
Oh, he is in marketing.
The one with the soda tastes like something you could have with a burger and fries.
Yeah.
You can have it with
yeah,
lunch and dinner, but you can only have one of these.
Unless you
these
like having more dessert.
No, you're not allowed to. Only one dessert. Don't you know the rules? Here, do you want more?
You can have a big dessert.
We just found out what a little bit of what your childhood was like.
If you let it linger, you can pick up the whiskey a bit more, which is nice.
Man. Okay. My feelings on whiskey sours have
I definitely
have
think
changed.
These are two good examples of a whiskey sour that are far beyond the powdered mix version that you had in undergrad.
Yeah, there's no
So question. I'm gonna eat some, a little slightly eat my words from earlier that I think that those are my only associations with whiskey sours. I guess this is sort of showing to me that you can probably do a whiskey sour in a way that doesn't make you feel about, but doesn't make you, it just doesn't, it doesn't taste like bad decisions at 19.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
but really, why did I wander into that sorority house, you know?
We're going to wrap this up. Keep on listening to the show. A whole lot more to come. This was a W, but it's kind of in the middle because it's a classic everybody knows and talks about quite a bit. So we did this one ahead. But there's a whole bunch more afterwards, so keep listening. It only gets better and better. Until next time, bye now. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening to the Monster in a Glass podcast. I would like to thank Jason Cruz and Nick Lehman for unraveling the history in the front part of the show, the regular tasting team Kevin Rtajczyk, Rachel Rubin, Nicole Pizzini, and Eric Martin for joining me in the grueling task of sampling each cocktail we discuss. And a special thanks to the skilled bartenders at Ward 8 in Evanston, Illinois, for taming the cocktail monsters we enjoy. I would also like to thank Mark Piani for the music at the head of the show. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook, subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and Podomatic, and give us an awesome rating and tell us what you think while you're at it. And as always, if you're into thinking and drinking, come blacken your liver with us.